Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Page 57. Commenting on Lord Brahma's birth, Jiva Goswami writes in Paramatmasandarbha, Anucheda 8, the guna avatars are described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. 11.4.5. In the beginning of creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested the incarnation of Brahma to create the world through the mode of passion. Vishnu, the master of sacrifices and the object of the Brahmana's worship, to maintain the world through the mode of goodness. And Shiva, to destroy the world through the mode of ignorance. In this way, the residents of the material world are always subject to creation, maintenance, and destruction. This verse means that the Purusha avatar is the controller of all the three modes of nature. In his pastime in controlling the various modes, he first becomes Brahma, and with the mode of passion engages in the activities of secondary creation. Then he becomes Vishnu, who employs the mode of goodness. In this way, the remainder of the verse is to be understood. The word Dvija Dharma Setu means the protector of the Brahmana's duties. The Lord also becomes Shiva to destroy the universe by employing the mode of ignorance. In this way, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is performed. That's so interesting to notice. The mode of ignorance is what destroys. So if one is functioning under the mode of ignorance, then there'll always be destruction. It can't be otherwise, right? So that unless one follows the Vedic version, one's not functioning in goodness, so whatever one is doing, it will be destructive. It's just a matter of how quick or slow it is. But it's just, that's how it will function. Right? Lord Vishnu is described in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.15. Into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the Supersoul. And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material nature, the personality of Vedic wisdom, whom we call the self-born, was generated. Okay. So he's the one that carries the modes of nature. Everything is done by him. Right? Does that make sense? But the Brahma becomes empowered, and his transformation as Shiva then takes care of that aspect. Right?
Yeah.
But himself, he has to take care of maintenance, because that no one else can do. Right? It's the most, to build something, to destroy something, these are not that difficult. Right? Endeavor is there, of course. But compared to maintenance, that's the hardest. You'll find very few places that are maintained. Right? There's a new place that's nice and shiny because it was just built. Right? And it's run down because no one maintains it. So to find something that's old and in good shape, that's rare. Right? Because that means that maintenance. Yes?
When it says he first becomes Brahma, is that the Lakshana Shanti?
No, it means through his, it's his potency that's doing it, but he does it through an empowered Jiva. Like that. But it's still, ultimately it's still Krishna doing everything, because even Brahma wants to create, or Shiva destroys, still he has to sanction it.
So it's actually in as Vishnu the maintainer that he's sanctioning that Brahma is.
Yes, that's why he says he's the lord of the three modes, because means he needs no sanction to do what he's doing, but Brahma and Shiva need sanction to do what they're doing. Right? So everything is him.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether we're dealing on, when we're dealing on the platform of Bhagavan, then there's a difference.
Yes.
Right? If we're dealing on Paramatma or Brahman, then there's that similarity. The Lord entered by the power of his invincible potency. Right, so that's how he's entered, is by the potency. Then in order to create the material world, Lord Vishnu entered this lotus flower and personally, Swayam, became Brahma. Then as a potter fashions pots and other things from clay, the Lord fashioned the material universe from the various material ingredients. So this is the original Hari Potter. He fashions the universe, right? Yes. The other one's just mildly empowered. Right? Maitreya continues his narration. Brahma, born out of the lotus flower, could not see the world, although he was situated in the world. Right? Because you're dealing with the jiva. Jiva can only do something that's sanctioned. So they want to take part. In other words, he's pious enough, he has the inclination, he wants to take part in the creative process. Right? Therefore, then, he has that opportunity. But in actuality, it's the Lord himself that does everything. Although he was situated in the whirl, right? So everything's there in the lotus. The Lord has entered it, all the modes are there, all the jivas are there with all their interest in fruit of activities, all the elements of the universal form, everything's there, but he can't see even though he's in the whirl, which is right in the center. Right? Because it's only by the Lord's grace you can see. Otherwise, we're sitting here thinking, I can see, right? But we're not in the center of anything. Right, you know, maybe our troubles, yes, but other than that, they're not in the center of anything else, right? But then, but he is actually in the center of everything, but still he can't see. So it's only by the Lord's grace. When the Lord sees, then you can see. He therefore circumambulated all of space, and while moving his eyes in all directions, he achieved four heads and turns of the four directions. He was not able to comprehend the creation, the lotus, or himself, even after he descended into the water through the stem of the lotus. 16 through 19. In his purport to verses 18 and 19, Srila Prabhupada explains how no one, including Brahma, can fully understand the complexities of the creation or even the complexities of oneself. The subject matter of the speculations of Brahma in the beginning regarding the creation of the cosmic manifestation is still a subject matter for mental speculators. The most intelligent man is he who tries to find the cause of his personal existence and that of the whole cosmic creation, and thus tries to find the ultimate cause. Because if his attempt is properly executed with penance and perseverance, it is sure to be crowned with success. So, if you want to know what's going on, find the original. Because trying to understand the mechanics of what's actually going on is way beyond anybody's capacity, even beyond Brahma's capacity. And he's the most intelligent, most pious living entity in the universe. Right? So, it's only when you try to find the original cause, or the Supreme Lord himself, then, by his grace, then you'll understand what needs to be understood. But if we try to do it through the mechanical system, it'd be very hard. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, if I have a big machine, let's say I have a car, right? And so if I take the car apart screw by screw, analyze each one, analyze what each screw and each part is made out of, the metallic composition, and then come up with theories and processes, will I ever actually know what the car is?
No.
But if I approach Mr. Ford,
yes,
then I know what the car is.
Yes. So
You understand? So without knowing the mechanics, you actually know what's there. So that's the thing, is the mechanics, and that's just the car. So we're talking about the universe. So it's unlimited.
So we have to approach the advanced devotees.
Yes, the advanced devotees, and with the purpose of knowing the Lord.
Yes.
Right. So it's only by knowing the Lord you know everything, because He is everything. Right. So it's a simple process. You want to know everything, know the person who is everything, right?
Go ask everything.
Huh?
Go ask everything.
Everything, yes. By dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go near to the Lord. But without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. So that's the point of upanaya. Upa means bringing close. Right? The sadhana and these other aspects, they bring close. Right, we make our endeavor and all that. Therefore, the penances and perseverance. But it's the Lord's mercy, being pleased by that, that you actually get the realization. Right? Someone who's austere, who's following the shastras, living in the mode of goodness, following all the rules and regulations, for them, they can bring themselves near.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But you can only know by the grace of the Lord.
Yes.
That's the whole thing. It means one can't know on one's own. That's why you have these very pious people, they're doing so many nice things, but they're still just as far away. You know? They're closer, but to actually understand, they don't understand anymore, but they're in a better position. So that's why if someone in that position takes up Krishna consciousness, it's very easy for them. But if they don't, then it's more difficult. It's easier to know someone if you're near by being facing them than facing away them. Right? I can be farther away and facing the person. I know more about the person than if I'm close and have my back to them. Right? So that's the principle. Such understanding of the Lord is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhakti amam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Thakur's comments on verse 19. This verse shows that with the will of the Lord, all attempts by materialists will end in failure. He entered the water by means of the tubes in the lotus stem. He searched out the lotus navel of Narayana, from which arose the stem of the lotus. Though he approached very close, he could not reach it, since it is impossible to reach without bhakti. Right? So through his endeavor, he got quite close, but still he can't understand. Brahma then focused his mind on the Supreme Lord. After 100 years of meditation, he achieved transcendental knowledge along with the Lord's mercy. 20-22, footnote 10. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.32 further explains, all of me, naming my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, color, qualities, and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse states, here we can see that the Lord is sufficiently pleased with Brahmaji, and therefore he offers his causeless mercy to him, so that Brahmaji may have the factual realization of the Lord by his mercy only. So that's the means knowing the Lord, then you actually are in knowledge, right? And that's the natural position of the living entity. So Sat Chit Ananda means the Chit means knowledge of the relationship with the Lord, right? That will actually maintain, you can say, factual eternal existence, right? Because now we're technically, even though we're eternal, we're not in eternal existence because we have to die and then be born, then die, then born. So everything we know is temporary, though the soul will go on. So we're functioning in temporary existence. So only when you're in contact with the Lord do you function in eternal existence. Knowledge is complete because it's knowledge of the Lord. Ananda is complete because it's actually transcendental happiness. But before that, we just deal with material happiness, which is as temporary as our existence. Yes.
If not more.
So then the problem is that the until one knows the Lord, then it's not possible to function on the natural eternal platform. And that only happens by bhakti. Right? And bhakti you gain from the devotees. Does that make sense? So, in the association of devotees, hearing and chanting about the Lord's glories and rendering devotional service, that gives all perfection. So that's what the Shastras are trying to tell us. But being as stubborn as we are, then we need 18,000 verses telling us from hundreds of different ways, or maybe even thousands, before we become convinced, right? So like the Sandarbhas, those are all the philosophical points that are there in the Bhagavatam. But they're all making the same point. They're just different angles of it. Like that. So in that way, then there's thousands of points. Right? Just because we're so stubborn. Yeah, okay.
They are more stubborn than us.
Who?
Yes,
they're more stubborn because they're there. They're not going away, and they're so nicely written that you can't actually speculate on them. You'll notice that you never hear the Mayavadis in that dealing with the Sandarbhas. Because you can't juggle them. Like that. Whatever Jiva Goswami writes cannot be juggled. What anybody else has written can be. Right? Even Vyas, it can be. But it's written like that on purpose so that these people can feel that they will take shelter of the Vedas and do their speculation rather than like the modern academies, that they will take shelter not of the Vedas and then speculate. Right? So, but Jiva Goswami's is written so that it can't be. So you see, they don't bother with the Sandarbhas. Okay. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 21 explains. Samadhi involves concentrating the mind upon the supreme cause of all. Even if one is unaware of whether his actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized. Concentration of the mind on the Supreme is certainly a form of devotional service. To cease from personal sense endeavors and to concentrate on the Supreme Cause is a sign of self-surrender. And when self-surrender is present, that is a sure sign of devotional service. Each and every living entity needs to engage in devotional service to the Lord if he wishes to understand the ultimate cause of his existence. Right? So this makes the point of for devotional service that you're focusing on the Supreme, right? That's the principle. And to make that focus, make that endeavor, then that is a form of devotional service. So we can see is if it's done to please the Lord, then that's the proper, that's the recommended path of devotional service. But you can see that those on the path of karma and jnana are also focusing on the Supreme as Brahman and Paramatma. Right? And so, therefore, it's a form of devotional service. Right? And the more they're committed, the more they're renounced, right? The more they're following the Shastra, performing their duties, the greater is that devotional service. The difference is those who are focused on Bhagavan, then when they get the benefit of that realization, they get liberation, they get facilities, they continue the process, right? Till they get to prema. And coming to prema, they still continue the process. So this is pure devotional service. But when one gets to the point where whatever it is one was looking for originally on the path of karma and jnana, attaining it, if one then gives up this path, that's therefore called karma and jnana. Right? The same activities connected bhakti is not called karma and jnana. Right? Mm-hmm. We call it karma yoga, jnana yoga. Mm-hmm. Right? Does this make sense? So, that's the whole point, is without bhakti, these other processes cannot function. Right? The impersonalist has to be focused on the Brahman, has to be committed to that, has to follow the austerities to make it favorable to focus. All that's a form of devotional service. But it's only practice up to the point where they feel they've attained liberation. Same with the karmi. focus on the Supreme as Paramatma, the Lord of all sacrifices, who's sanctioning everything, but once they get the fruits of their yajnas, then they give up that bhakti. Does that make sense? So in other words, here's a point that directly shows how it's not just, oh, in some cases there's bhakti included. No. Point is anybody focusing on the Supreme, that has an element of bhakti because it is the Lord. But it's not in proper knowledge. It's not coming in proper parampara. So therefore they're not getting the full benefit. They're bringing themselves close. Right? But they won't get the realization unless it's done in actual devotion. Which means you have to come to the point of appreciating pure devotion. So you have to give up the concept of karma and jnana in one's practice of bhakti to be able to get the Lord's full mercy. Yeah.
So Maharaj, a person who is trying to develop Brahman realization of Paramatma, he needs to have some type of devotion for Paramatma.
Yes, well, the point is there come here, let's read this again. Samadhi involves concentrating the mind upon the supreme cause of all, even if one is unaware of whether his actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized. Right?
Can you say that there is a little more than, like when we say bhakti, it's devotion. It's like,
well, that's what Prabhupada says, a form of devotional service. It's not very developed. You know, just like karma, mistra, jnana, mistra, bhakti is a form of bhakti. But if it's coming in parampara, then it's dynamic. It's just a matter of time before it comes to pure devotion. But this form that they're following is not very developed. But the point being made is that the results of their endeavors is given by bhakti, not by karma or jnana. Karma or jnana are not independent that they can award results. Only bhakti. So that means anything anybody's doing in the world is getting results is because of this element of bhakti. But they don't understand this. And then we'll think we're just some out-of-the-way little cult on this corner of the planet, and then there's the reality of the world. No, it's the other way around. The whole universe is powered by the Lord, His energies, by devotional service. And then we think, so that's the reality. Because understand this, if we take this as a reality, what does that leave for us to do? What are our alternatives? Only devotional service. Now, if we're attached to philanthropy, altruism, all kinds of isms, you know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, then where are our options? They're not there. So therefore, we don't want to come to that point. We'll always go, no, but that means this kind of devotion. That means we'll always qualify it, because by qualifying it, it means then, yes, pure devotion, so all this is a free for me to play with. But it's Krishna's universe. He's running it. He's managing the modes. Everything's going on by Him. That's the reality. This is the switch that we're seeing. That is the difficulty between how we've understood creation before and how the creation is being described now by Maitreya, where it's all about the Lord. Because otherwise, yes, the Lord's there, and then there's Shiva and Brahma, and Brahma does all these things. But the point is, no, it's Krishna's potency. That is, Brahma's doing all these things. So it's actually, Krishna is Brahma. Krishna is Shiva. That's the meaning of this, you know, what is it? You always hear the Hindu singing. Something Brahma, something Shiva, something Maheshwara, you know. Oh, yeah, Brahma, yeah. Brahma Vishnu, Brahma Shiva, Brahma Maheshwara. Like, you know, that's one of their favorite shlokas. Like, you know, that's the hair standing on end shloka. Like that. But they don't understand what it means. It means the person. He, through his energies, as Brahman and Paramatma, and through his energies, he's controlling everything. But it's ultimately the person, it's his will that's doing it. Right? He's in total control. Like, he doesn't lose control here. You know, he starts it and it's going great, and then woo, you know, then it turns into something else. Or, you know, he makes it, he's great, yeah, like this, and then somebody else comes along and says, okay, I'm taking this half. You know, you stay on that side. You know, it's not like that. Or, or you know, he's gone home, you know, and he's left this place to run as it is. You know, it's not, you know, it's not like Calcutta, right? It just exists, you know, like that, you know. Does that make sense?
Yes. So nobody can do anything without bhakti.
No one can actually be successful in anything without bhakti. But, and you see, the more that it means the samadhi here, concentration of the mind upon the supreme cause of all. So those who have that greater concentration, they're more successful. So you say, oh, this guy's successful, this guy's not. It's not technique, it's concentration.
Yes.
Because if concentration is there, you'd figure out what works. That's all. The person's concentrated, he sees this doesn't work, this does work. But because we're not concentrated, right, then we see, okay, well, we're going with this. It doesn't work, but we can't see that. So in other words, it's the Lord's rules, it's the Lord's creation. You focus on Him and make it work, then it's there. So what we can see is that there's so many levels of each of these, just like in Bhagavan realization, then there's so many levels. Same in Paramatma, same in Brahman. Right? Because the ordinary, let's say, you have your corporate businessman, right? So now he's focusing on what mechanics the economic system works on. Right? And the greater his focus, the more he can see. Right? And so then, what are they doing? Is it austere? If you want to be a top corporate businessman, is it austere?
Yes.
Yeah. Hardly any family time, you know, renounced. You don't have time for anything, right? At any moment, you're on call.
Yes.
Remember one devotee was telling me he had a, you know, he went to school and then, you know, that, and then they grow up and then they met after like, you know, 20, 30 years. And then what's everybody doing, you know? So this one guy, he's, forget what he gets. It's some kind of like ridiculous sum of money. We're not talking here six figures. We're talking well beyond that. And he has a house, you know, top grade house, everything like this, you know, in some fabulous place. But the rule is he has the job because at any moment, at any time, they can call him. And he has to come. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, his kid's, you know, birthday party or his anniversary or his mother just died. When they call, he goes. So he may get 2 weeks break. He may not. He may go back, they say 2 weeks, and then something comes up an hour later and he's gone. Sorry? Yes. So So it's austere.
Yes.
Like that. You have to be committed. You have to be focused. You know, any moment you're not focused, then you say something in that little meeting there, and it's not focused, then they start to doubt whether you belong in that meeting. You know, so it's very, very serious. Does this make sense? So because of that, they're focusing on the aspects of the universal form and of, so which is Paramatma, and on the aspects of the nature of the mechanics of it, which is Brahman. But they don't understand it as the supreme. For them, the dollar is supreme, right? You know, before the meeting, you know, they all get up and they turn and they offer their respects to, you know, at the end there's the dollar sign there, and they're all, you know, like this. You know? No? Yeah, so then, you know, yes, and then like that. So for them, the supreme is the buck, right?
Yes.
At least for now. Maybe after time it'll be the euro, but right now it's the buck.
Right?
You know? Yes.
What you're saying is true. Like, the wolf wars street is not the money bomb.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay, yes.
But is it Benjamin?
Benjamin's, you know, one of the more serious forms of God in this case, like that. George Washington, you'd have to do a lot of worship of George to get some benefit. Benjamin, you get a lot more.
I'm not just saying as a joke, people do that.
No, that's the, you know, I'm saying people do that, but it's been made into a joke. Like I'm not sure who I was. I think I was... No. Who's the other?
I think I was quoting Mel Brooks there.
Yeah. But it's, yes. So that's the thing, is they're focusing on an aspect of the Lord. They're following the laws connected with that. They're austere. That's why they're getting benefit. We're thinking it's all those little tricks that are in that self-help book. You understand? Those are the tricks. Why are there hundreds of these books?
Because they don't work.
Because they don't work unless you have the samadhi. And that, none of the books are teaching.
If you have the samadhi, you don't need the books.
If you have this, that's why it says the habits of successful people.
Yes.
The successful people aren't reading the book. He's observing those who are successful because they have that focus. But this is the thing that they don't catch. Because who wants to catch this? That means then you have to be conscious of some aspect of God, and committed to that. And it works as long as you're focused, and as soon as you're not, it's lost. You know, and the ego comes up, that's a mode of ignorance, it's destructive. So when there's no false ego, you stay, it works. As soon as a false ego comes up, the focus is less because you think that I am the man, like that. And so then they lose it. So who wants to hear that? As soon as you become proud, you'll lose it.
That's the point. That's why I'm doing this.
Yes. Right there. You want to be able to come to the, how you say, what is it? That front little desk, front little thing like that, and all the guys are trying to get through, and then this one guy in a suit just kind of comes in and moves around everybody and goes through, right? And then one guy turns to the other. Who does he think he is? Does he think he owns the building? And the other guy says, he does own the building. Right? You like to hear those things, right? But as soon as that happens, then things start to go down, right? Does this make sense? Now, this is something quite significant. What is being said here is that all there is devotional service. Now, do we want to be scientific in this practice of devotional service or not? Therefore, nectar devotion is the science, the complete science, right? Because it's about bhakti, and it's not about all the tricks. It's about the surrender to Guru and Krishna. If that's there, everything else comes.
So unless we connect it with the actual Supreme, there will be false ego, and then there will be destruction.
Yes. Yeah, because you're functioning on the temporary platform, because even though you're focusing on the Supreme, you're not seeing as the Supreme, like Hiranyakashipu or Ravana. They're actually dealing with the Supreme, but they don't know that that's what they do, so they're getting temporary benefits. Hiranyakashipu got nice facilities as Ravana. But he didn't get the eternal benefit of having focused on the Lord and knowing he's dealing with the eternal Lord. Does that make sense? Yes.
So for us as sadhakas, we face this difficulty, is that we're trying to hold two watermelons in one hand.
That's a good one. I like that one. I take it that's a saying from within the tropics. Yeah, because otherwise, outside the tropics, there are no watermelons. So that's a good one. I like
that. Because as a devotee, we try to be successful in devotional service, and it takes a lot of energy and time, but also the material side, for most of us, is there. So we're trying somehow.
Yes. One of them drops.
Yeah.
And then in dropping, you get so, and then you drop the other one. Okay. Yeah, you never see them. They juggle, they do all kinds of things. They never hold two watermelons in one hand. That would be a big trick, yeah. Because we're not aware of what we're dealing with. If we understand, it's all one process, right? There's the direct aspect of that devotion to the Lord. There's the indirect aspect of the focus on the techniques, right? Of the two, the focus on the Lord is more important than the technique. Because if we look at it, that we don't look at the technique, we just look at the Lord. Whenever we've done that, we're taken care of. right? We don't have the drive that we have necessarily with the inspiration. I have a plan. I'll get something done. We don't necessarily. The results are not necessarily what we would want them to be, but we get by. You know, if we think back in time, there's never been a time really when we haven't had anything. You know, here or there, maybe on a bus ride or something, you know, you miss a meal or, you know, there's a problem with the toilet or, you know, something, you know. But in general, then there's no problem, right? So because that's focused on the main aspect, not so much the secondary. But one can focus on both of them. But the point is the hierarchy is there, is that this is the secondary aspect of supporting the primary. In other words, I'm looking at what functions within this world, how to make that run nicely, so that that is supportive of the Lord. So there's no contradiction, but as we're saying, is that we're thinking that there's a difference. There's devotional service, and then there's a reality of the material world. But actually, there's only one reality. Krishna's non-dual. Because by saying that there's two, we're saying there's duality. And then that means Krishna's part of one, so who's part of the other? You know? And, you know, of course, our friend Beazle will take the credit for it. But the whole point is there isn't such a thing. It's an illusion to think that there's a reality separate from Krishna. That's what Krishna makes in the first verse. He is everything. And the second verse is, if you have any value that is separate from Him, that's illusion. Because there can't be. So we're taking, okay, the primary is, we just only focus on that and don't deal with the secondary. Which is okay if you can do it. But if one's in a position that the secondary is useful, then one's engaging that in the same focus. Because it's all Krishna. There isn't something else other than Krishna. So it's actually an illusion that we think that there's other systems other than Krishna. So that we're focusing on the Supreme, we're getting something from it. Devotees get involved in New Age or this or that. They're getting something from it because it is Krishna. And it is a higher state than gross sense gratification and self-centeredness. So they feel that it's superior. But it is in no way comparable to direct devotional service or to understanding the universe in connection with the Lord, which is on the next higher level of Dharma. And then seeing the platform, the transcendence, the soul, which is moksha. So even within the material framework, it's below 50%. You know, it's number 2 out of 4. Right? So then it's not that developed. Is that right? So there is a pot that one can put it all together and see it all together. Just what's direct and what's indirect. Right? The direct is devotion to Krishna. The indirect is you're taking a shower. Right? So, you know, how to take the shower properly so that you're clean so you can go to the temple and it will please Krishna. So the technique is there, so it doesn't have to be a separate thing. Yeah. But because of our conditioning, everything is separate. So for us, it's a new concept that, you know, there's God involved. Even though there hasn't been a moment in our existence that we haven't been dealing with the Lord. On any sphere. But we think that we're not. We think it's independent of that. Because we think we're independent, so naturally. So technically there is only one watermelon, so it's possible. So as soon as you think there's two, that's when the problem starts, right? But now you look at the watermelon, right? There's the inside and then there's the outside. So that's how, it's not two watermelons, it's the inside and the outside, you know. So it's balanceable, right? No? Yeah. So, work. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Verses 22 to 33. Brahma performs austerities and sees the Lord. Maitreya continues. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge, and as a result he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. Right? So the Lord reveals himself. He's there. But when he reveals, then we see. He doesn't reveal, we don't see. It's not that he's not there. Right? Brahma could see that on the water there was a gigantic lotus-like white bedstead, the body of Seshanaga, on which the personality of Godhead was lying alone. The whole atmosphere was illuminated by the rays of the jewels bedecking the hood of Seshanag. And that illumination dissipated all the darkness of those regions, right? Because the bottom of the universe. So then Seshanag, that's his service, is that with the jewels on his head, that dissipates the darkness, right? Because he's the foremost of the Nagas, and that's how the Nagas are able to see, right? Because they all have jewels in their head, because their planet is below the Earth, so it's, the sun is blocked. They don't get any sun. Yes? Seshanag is Ananta.
Oh. Just previously you said that Sesh is the jiva.
No, that's the aspect of Sesha or Ananta that holds up all the planets on his heads. You understand? Yes, it's just like you have like in the same progression, you have Hiranyagarbha, Virat, and Brahma. Right? It's all the Lord. Right? Because he is the creator. But at the same time, as Brahma is the jiva. So in the same way is that then Ananta, then he has that, he's holding up all the universe, but he's doing that by empowering a jiva. Does that make sense? So it's the same kind of principle.
So he has two aspects of three or four, like...
Then you have... Sankarsana, like that. Yeah, Balaram. So, Sesha is the last. That's why the term Sesha. Sesha means the end. So that's the last of the expansions in that form. Right. So he's also known as Ananta Sesh. Yes. What's the difference? What's the difference between under?
No, I mean, we have a planet here, so
okay.
Inside,
so I mean, you're worried if we'll come out in Chicago or something.
No, it's just my mind
yeah.
Is curious.
As long as you don't come up in Pretty Boy Floyd's apartment, then you're okay. Okay.
Yeah.
The salt ocean is how much? 80,000, right? 100,000 miles. Yojans. 100,000 yojans. 100,000 yojans. That means 800,000 miles. How big is the salt ocean that you see here? A little less, yes. It's 25,000 if you go all the way around at the equator. So that means that you're talking south of that, then you're not talking that much, 12,000. You know, maybe even less. So this is only part of the salt ocean. So we're only a portion of this Jambudvip. Because the Habu Mandala includes 9 islands. So they're below that. Okay. So the point is whether we're a full globe in itself or just a part of a globe, it doesn't matter. It's below that. But you can dig here and get to Nagaloka. As we see, what's his name? No.
not the Nivadakaviches, not Nikita Khrushchev. It's something with an N. But whatever it is, it was part of his graduation test, and that he had to get some earrings for the guru's wife, and Takshaka wanted those earrings. And so then he came and stole them and disappeared in a hole in the earth, and he's digging. And then I think Indra empowered his stick with the thunderbolt, so he dug all the way through the Nagaloka. So it can be done. Now don't get into all this stuff. This is not for this class. That you save for when you're at home with your friends. You know? Otherwise then you lose the taste. Right? You know. Okay. The luster of the transcendental body of the Lord mocked the beauty of the coral mountain. The coral mountain is very beautifully dressed by the evening sky, but the yellow dress of the Lord mocked its beauty. There is gold on the summit of this mountain, but the Lord's helmet, bedecked with jewels, mocked it. The mountain's waterfalls, herbs, etc., with a panorama of flowers, seemed like garlands, but the Lord's gigantic body and his hands and legs, decorated with jewels, pearls, tulsi leaves, and flower garlands, mocked the scene on the mountain. His transcendental body, unlimited in length and breadth, occupied the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. His body was self-illuminated by unparalleled dress and variegatedness, and was properly ornamented. The Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service free from material contamination, right? Because all knowledge comes from the Lord's lotus feet. That's why meditating upon the Lord's lotus feet, one gets all knowledge, one gets devotion, one gets renunciation. All benefits come by that absorption in the Lord's lotus feet. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays from his moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. 22 to 26. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, he saw the lotus feet which were fulfilling the desires of those who worship on special paths, for fulfilling their desires, or with a desire for attaining the Lord, Sva, or for satisfying the Lord with service. Right, so there are those who are worshiping the Lord to get what they want, to attain the Lord, or to please the Lord.
Attaining the Lord is liberation.
Attaining the Lord, but it means it'll be devotional liberation. You know, same planet,
yes.
Same form, same opulence, same associate. But if you're just doing it to please the Lord only, then that's free from any other desire. Yes. Vivikta Margai means by paths which were not mixed with jnana karma. Or it can mean by pure paths arising from vaidhi or raganuga bhava marg with dasya shakti or other rasas. Those feet fulfilled the desires of serving properly. He showed only one foot among many thousands of his feet by lifting it up slightly. Right, so then we can see here is you're dealing with the thousand-headed Purusha, right? Because in the universal form, this aspect means he's the origin of that. Does that make sense? So there's the Lord who is everything, and then there is the aspect of that blueprint of the universe, right? So was it what we were talking yesterday? The archetype and the architect. Right, the architect, he designs the archetype. Right, in other words, the blueprint is the archetype. So the universal form, there's that which is the archetype, but there is the universe, there's the Lord who is the universal form as the architect. Right, so there's a difference between there's the person, and then there is what has been, what can be combined and created by that design of the person.
Mark?
Yes.
In this case,
Paramatma
and Brahma, yes. Yes. Because here, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma of the universe. So you can say he's the Paramatma of the universal form. It means on the universal platform. Paramatma is the Paramatma of the universal form, in that he enters each living entity and in every atom, between every atom. So you have to have all those levels. You have to have Mahavishnu as the Paramatma of Mahatattva, right? That the material concept. Otherwise, how is it there? It's not affected unless he glances on material energy. Right? Then only when Garbhodakshaya Vishnu enters, then you have the universal element of what can be established, but then each item within that has to be able to function, and that's then Kirodakshaya Vishnu. Okay. Yes?
The seven-headed Purusha here, really, talking about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu?
Yes, but he's because Brahma, he associates with the Lord as the thousand-headed Purusha. He also has more. Yes, he has probably more. No. But at the same time, it is him, but it's not him.
Yeah, but different whatever.
Yes.
Form.
Yes. Because that's the whole point, is each one of the forms is the same as the other. Just like we were saying that Sanat Kumar is approaching Shankarshan, who the sages call Vasudev.
But we said it's a different mood. Right?
Yes, that's the whole point. It's the same. So it means you have Prajumna approaching Sankarsana, who is you know, none other than Vasudev. Because Vasudev, he to perform his pastimes, then you have to have a place, you have to have that attractiveness, and you have to have that taste. So therefore then he expands as the Chaturvyuha so that it's complete. Yes, and he has one head.
Yeah, and then the lotus.
Yes.
And right. Anthony, he is underneath in the water or somewhere else.
Where? I don't know. No idea at all.
I just cannot place him. He's too big.
We need a picture.
You've never seen the pictures of Ananta Sesh with Vishnu lying on top of him there, and Ananta Sesh is over? And
no, so he's in the bed.
Huh?
That's his bed?
That's his bed, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's his bed. Yeah, didn't he say?
White bedstead.
Yeah, white bedstead. Oh, so bedstead doesn't mean anything to you. Bedstead means the bed. It's just a fancy name for bedstead. It's supposed to be bedstead, but we just say bed. You know, the bath, bedstead, and beyond wouldn't work, so they just shorten it, right? Yeah, what it called? Bathroom, bedstead, and, you know, everything else. It doesn't work, right? So they shortened it. Okay?
And that's why we don't understand philosophy.
Yes, and that's why we don't understand philosophy. Because we keep shortening everything. Vanchas Prabhu. Yeah, okay. By this hint and moving one eyebrow in the next verse, it is indicated that the Lord showed his form as Krishna, though Krishna appears only later during Vaibhasvata Manvantara, to Brahma in this and the next two verses. Right, so he's showing himself as Krishna. Like in the Sringa Purana explains how in a previous creation that he reveals himself not as Krishna but as Nrisimha. And then he uses Nrisimha mantra to create the universe. Because now this time he uses Gopal mantra to create the universe. So it's just, you know, variety.
Okay,
It is indicated by this hint and moving one eyebrow in the next verse, it is indicated that the Lord showed his form as Krishna to Brahma in this and the next two verses. Other scriptures also indicate that Krishna revealed himself to Brahma. Tadu havacha hovacha brahmano saranam charito me jata shruta parardate so bhutyaya gopa vesho me purastat avir bhavuvat abhava. After passing the first half of my lifetime, when the night ended, I and meditated. Okay. I meditated and praised the Lord who appeared in the dress of a cowherd boy before me. Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Brahma Samhita also describes how Krishna showed himself to Brahma. Thus, some say that, quote, revealing one foot, end quote, in this verse refers to the form of Krishna, who stands with his feet crossed, showing one sole of his foot. Right? So you have all these interesting meanings of the acharyas. Maitreya continued. The Lord also acknowledged the service of the devotees and vanquished their distress by his beautiful smile. The reflection of his face, decorated with earrings, was so pleasing because it dazzled with the rays from his lips and the beauty of his nose and eyebrows. 27. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. The Lord returns the devotees' worship by worshipping them through showing his beautiful face. He repays the debt of the devotees' service by this, since the devotees do not accept material gifts or liberation. His smile destroys the suffering of the devotees and also the suffering out of longing to see him. He shows one beautiful eyebrow. This indicates a confidential emotion of Krishna. Those who receive such worship by the Lord are actually special devotees, right? Because moving the eyebrow, when you move the eyebrow, just one, right? It means that there's something confidential. It's close. There's an emotion there. Because otherwise, in general cases, eyebrows always work together, right? If you're upset or you're surprised or that's stupid, it's both eyebrows. But when there's one eyebrow, then that's confidential. Right? No? Yeah, so that's the thing. That's the advantage of the science of rasa.
Yes.
Because they know these things.
What do you
mean,
just use your
finger. It depends. It just depends upon who you are. If you're 70, it means you've had one too many facelifts. Okay. So I guess we'll stop here and we'll continue that. Yeah. Continuing in 60. Okay, those who receive such worship by the Lord are actually special devotees. So this is the Lord's reciprocation, so this is actually worship. Right? So the devotees are worshiping the Lord is worshiping the devotees. Srila Prabhupada adds, devotional service to the Lord is very much obliging to him. There are many transcendentalists in different fields of spiritual activities. But devotional service to the Lord is unique. Devotees do not ask anything from the Lord in exchange for the service. Even the most desirable liberation is refused by devotees, although offered by the Lord, like as we see with Prahlad Maharaj and others. Right? Thus the Lord becomes a kind of debtor to the devotees. And he can only try to repay the devotees' service with his ever-enchanting smile. The devotees are ever satisfied by the smiling face of the Lord, and they become enlivened. And by seeing the devotees so enlivened, the Lord himself is further satisfied. So there is continuous transcendental competition between the Lord and his devotees by such reciprocation of service and acknowledgement. Right? So the devotee is more satisfied, so it makes the Lord more satisfied, so then he has to smile more. You know, so it goes back and forth. My dear Vidura, Maitreya continues, the Lord's waist was covered with yellow cloth, resembling the saffron dust of the Kadamba flower, and it was encircled by a well-decorated belt. His chest, right, because the dhoti and the belt go together. Right, you see in cultures where they just wear dhoti and chadar, there's always a belt piece, right? Because otherwise the dhoti is not complete in itself, on its own. If you're wearing a shirt, then it doesn't matter, because that does the same job, right? It covers that top part. But if not, then there's another piece that covers. So Krishna always wears dhoti, a belt, a chadar, and a turban. So those four pieces he's always wearing. Not necessarily. The dhoti is yellow, but the belt is maybe something. I think his chadar is always yellow. The dhoti, because those two go together. They're a pair. But the belt doesn't have to be the same color like that. Just like the turban doesn't have to be the same color. But the chadar is, because sometimes they would pick up each other's chadar. Right? Krishna would pick up Radharani's sari, and she would pick up his chadar and then put it on. And then in the morning, then, you know, it would be noticed she's wearing Krishna's chadar, and then Yogamaya will just say, no, it's the morning sun, you know, the golden sun coming, and you think it's that color, right? Yeah. And then take everybody out of the room. Or Krishna, Mother Jashoda will go, why is he wearing Balaram's chadar? Because Balaram always wears blue, so does Radharani. So it works out. My dear Vidura, his chest was decorated with the Srivatsa marking and a necklace of unlimited value. Because right, in that you have the Srivatsa marking, the necklace is the Kastuba gem, which is reservoir, or it's all jivas are in the Kastuba gem. As a sandalwood tree is decorated with fragrant flowers and branches, the Lord's body was decorated with valuable jewels and pearls. He was the self-situated tree, the Lord of all others in the universe. And as a sandalwood tree is covered with many snakes, so the Lord's body was covered with the hoods of Ananta. Like a great mountain, the Lord stands as the abode for all moving and non-moving living entities. He is the friend of the snakes because Lord Ananta is his friend. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, right? So then, because he's their friends, therefore then, what's his name? The king of the snakes now, after Ananta goes. Who's he? Vasuki, right? So then they'll, you know, do things with the Lord and like that. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, so the Lord was seen with the thousands of golden helmeted hoods of Ananta Naga. And as a mountain is sometimes filled with jewels, so his transcendental body was fully decorated with valuable jewels. As a mountain is sometimes submerged in the ocean water, so the Lord is sometimes submerged in the water of devastation. 28-30. Jiva Goswami writes in his Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 3. These verses describe the thousand-headed Lord Prajumna, who resides on the Garbha ocean. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.29, the word avyakta mulam means the root of pradhan, the unmanifested origin of matter, and bhuvan nag gripendram means because he is the supreme controller. He is like the king of the trees that are the 14 material worlds, right? So Prajumna means Sankarshan is Mahavishnu. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is Prajumna, right? Because he is that attractive force that holds everything together and makes us also attracted to it, right? Because the universal form is there, but what's the point if we're not attracted to it? Right? What are we going to do? Because we have to be attracted. So then he is the attracting force. So everything that you see in creation, the reason we're attracted to anything is because the Lord has entered as Prajumna. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu has entered. He is in the universal form in that way. right? We have goals. We're attracted to it. Why? Because we can get a result, get a goal. That's Kiradakshaya Vishnu, because he's Aniruddha, right? But the whole point of all of that is that we'll become situated properly, be attracted to, endeavor for pleasing Vasudeva. Right, because the pastime is with Vasudeva. You know what I'm saying? We lost you there.
No.
You mean Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha?
Yes.
Okay, they are all serving Vasudeva.
Yes.
Okay, so the Lord wants the material creation so that the living entities can come back to Him and engage in pastimes with Him.
Yes.
Right? Vasudeva.
Yes.
So then, who carries that out? This is not a trick question.
Krishna? Yes.
Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha.
Yes. Okay.
If Vasudeva wants to interact with your living entity, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha make the arrangements.
Yes.
Right? So who is Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha in this case? We're dealing with the material creation. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu.
But and Kiradakshaya Vishnu is also, this was my bewilderment or thought, that is also Paramatma.
He is Paramatma, but he is also the universal form.
Yes.
But also Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is Paramatma of the universe,
yes,
and the universal form.
Yes.
But he's the attractive element of it,
yes,
and the and Kiradakshaya Vishnu is that the goal element of it.
Yes. So then the goal element seems like there's some passion in it.
No, but that's, you have to apply passion to get your goal.
Yes.
But appreciating the goal, there can't be passion, because you have to be in the present thinking of what's happening now. If you're thinking in the future, you don't notice what's happening in the present. Right? You know, there's that scenario where you arrange something for somebody, or they get something they want, and then immediately they're thinking about what you can do in the future. Everyone else is thinking, okay, we've done that, you know, get the results and this and that. But they're immediately again in the future. So they don't enjoy that, so therefore no one's pleased. Yeah. You know, it's just like you go out, spend a long time, you finally get the thing that you want,
yes,
and then you appreciate it for some time.
Yes.
Right? But if as soon as you get it, wow, this is great, now you want it in blue, yellow, and red,
yes,
you know, then you're not going to appreciate the one you have.
You're going to have a bad time.
No, you won't have a bad time. The one who arranged it will have a bad time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay. No? Yes? Yes. Should I have said pink instead of red? Either way, it doesn't matter.
Huh? Green.
Green, okay, yeah. I'm just laughing to it.
Advanced.
Yeah, advanced, yes. Okay. Okay, yeah, so we just did right here, Lord Prajumna, right? So Lord Prajumna, because that's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Maitreya finalizes. Lord Brahma, thus looking upon the Lord in the shape of a mountain, concluded that he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom and sweet songs, and looked very beautiful, singing garlands. Okay. He was protected by the Sudarshan wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire, etc. could not have access to him. When Lord Brahma, the maker of the universal destination, thus saw the Lord, he simultaneously glanced over creation. Lord Brahma saw the lake in Lord Vishnu's navel and the lotus flower, as well as the devastating water, the drying air, and the sky. All became visible to him. Lord Brahma, thus being surcharged with the motive passion, became inclined to create. And after seeing the five causes of creation, indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. 31 to 33.
You notice that there's a blank below that 31 to 33, so it appears that the acharyas didn't bring out anything there.
Five causes of creation.
Yeah, no, that's just what came up. But there's, if we note that they just blank below this point, so. I'm not sure. Maybe in the upcoming verses, then, this will be revealed. Unless it was revealed before and we are not remembering it.
Five causes of creation. Well, I mean, you have all the anamoy, pranamoy, those five. You have the five mahabhutas, because everything's based on all the tongue, smell, touch, taste, all these things. Okay, then questions, essay, chapter 9. Brahma's prayers for creative energy. Okay, did we just start this today? No, we started yesterday.
Yeah.
Pratigya. Fearing the influence of creative work predominated by the mode of passion, Brahma prays for the well-being of his devotion, right? Because otherwise he may get carried away by the mode of passion. So he's trying to avoid that here.
Brahma is trying to avoid that? He was very inspired.
Yes, he's inspired to create, but he's worrying that the influence of the creative work will then cloud his devotion. So he wants he's inspired to create, but he wants to make sure that in the creative process he doesn't forget the Lord.
Right.
Yes.
When we speak about creation, can we have creation without passion?
Creation without passion, generally it doesn't work so good. Because you have to use whether one is controlled by passion or whether one's just using passion. That's what creates is the mode of passion, right? So if it's connected with duties and all that, then it reduces the distracting effects.
The particular of this chapter is expressed in verse 23, in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport.
The Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the goddess of fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of this material world, and I pray I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. So when you identify with it, you're controlled by it. If you don't identify with it, then you're just assisting. Brahma, who is only an assistant in the modes of creation, wanted to remain in his actual position as an instrument of the Lord instead of becoming puffed up by the false prestige of thinking himself the creator. Vritti, a philosophical elaboration on the Pratigya. To avoid succumbing to false illusory concepts of oneself, a proper attitude towards the Lord and his devotional service is the only safeguard. Right, so both the Lord and that service. Right, so that means then you can see yourself properly. If you don't see the Lord properly and devotional service properly, then there'll always be the element you don't see yourself properly. So that's the point. When you see the Lord, you see yourself. Right? So self-realization means you have to understand the Lord. So someone's not understanding the Lord means the self-realization is not complete. Yes?
It means only at least
to know that Madhyama
is possible.
In which
that he sees himself and the Lord and he doesn't see the
devotees
and everything else.
Yes, then it's more. It means as you progress, then it gets more. So that's why it said at Madhyama that's considered advanced. Right? That means the neophyte will consider the Uttama as advanced. And the Madhyama is just something that you don't really make a differentiation.
You know, okay, they've been around a little longer, they know a little more, like that. But actually, Madhyama, then that's considered advanced because there's that stability. So then there's a stableness in however degree you are realizing the Lord, devotional service, and thus yourself. Right? So that's why that respect is. Means you're supposed to respect all living entities, right? Ants, this, that, let alone devotees, whatever their status. And then even more than the Madhyama, even more than the Uttama. Like that. So. To avoid succumbing to false illusory concepts of oneself, a proper attitude towards the Lord and His devotional service is the only safeguard, right? Because if you don't see the Lord and this devotional service, you will come up with some illusion about yourself. Because if we're servants of the Lord, so if you don't see that as the Lord, as He's the Master, if we consider ourselves a little bit of Master, then there our view of ourself is there's some illusion. Right? We don't see devotional service, right? We say there's devotional service and then there's something else, and that, then there's going to be an illusion. Right? I'm the practical guy rather than I'm the servant of the Lord. Right? Like that, yeah. The mood of servant, acting as an instrument in the Lord's hand, is the beginning and the end to achieve spiritual perfection. It means that it's not you start with that, end with something else. It's the beginning and the end, so it will always be there. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu confirms his protection and endorses Lord Brahma's behavior in the following verse. O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted, praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the penance you have undertaken to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, such spiritual perfection is not limited by material qualifications, but is developed by dint of one's sincere endeavor to render transcendental service. Right? So it's that sincere aspect, that's what makes it work. Now, whether one has good technique or not, good skills or not, that still is not going to impede the devotional progress. As long as the mood, right, is sincere, that sincere endeavor. Because the point is, if the endeavor is sincere, you will naturally develop how much skills are required. Does that make sense? That will just naturally happen. So you don't have to worry. Because if falsity goes there, that means that the sincerity is less, then you may think whatever I'm doing, that's good enough. But if there's sincerity, one is always improving. Right? Whatever speed the Lord wants it to improve. Right? But that doesn't mean that somebody that has material skills is more advanced. Because it's about the sincerity. Because otherwise the tendency of the neophyte position is to think my material skills are a symptom of my being superior. Does that make sense? No, it just means this is your skills. And you engage those in the Lord's service. You have more skills, you engage it in the Lord's service. You have less skills, you engage it in the Lord's service. Because whatever your skills, there's always better. Right? If you compare your skills to others, then you'll think you're great. But compare, let's say, okay, others can't manage. You can manage, right? So then that puts you in a senior position as far as you would be organizing things. But it doesn't necessarily mean that devotionally you're more advanced. It just means for management's sake, you're the senior. But devotionally, you may not be the senior. Right? And even you can manage better than everyone else, but there are bigger managers than temple presidents or temple commanders or Samkirtan leaders, right? On the planet, there amazingly just happens to be, you know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, you know, it goes on. People manage countries, multinational corporations, you know, so it's a little bigger than a temple, right? So wherever you're starting, that's just your karma, that you happen to have that much skill. Then you engage it sincerely in the Lord's service, it will improve, it will get better. But it's not about that getting better, that's just a symptom of that sincere application.
It's about relationships.
So it's about relationships.
just like, let's say, you're baking something and you check it, okay? You stick the toothpick in and it doesn't stick. Okay, then what does that mean? Huh? Baked, yeah, because it didn't stick. If it's stuck, then it's not cooked. Okay, so now, are you done? The baking part's done, so that's it. Now you can take it out of the oven, flip it on top of the counter, and walk off, go back to your room, and watch, you know, video games, right? Huh?
Serving.
Oh, okay, so that means that there's a... You weren't quite sure, but yeah. You'll take a risk. You'll take a risk here. Okay, so you're going to serve it. You're going to serve it to somebody, right? Okay, and so...
Myself.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so even if it's the self, right? You know, how you say it's part of the process of self-realization. Okay. The whole point is then you're going to give that. But the point is so that means that cooking process, even though it is now better than when it was just batter, even though, you know, the batter wasn't bad either, right? You know, so that, like that. This all has some meaning. Okay, yeah, just okay. So then, but now in the cooked state, it's not that aspect's done, but it's still just part of a further process. So somebody's going to be pleased by this baking, right? You're going to offer it to the Lord. You're going to serve it to the devotees. You're going to eat it yourself, right? Does that make sense? You know, Bowser will be happy. You know, everybody's good, right? Right? So then that means is that one is managing, you can't say that's the end. Because it's just a matter of your serving, and so it just keeps on going. That's the point, is that whatever position we're in, it may be good, but there's still more, because devotional service is unlimited. It doesn't end. Okay. Voluntary endeavor is the only qualification for spiritual perfection. Material acquisitions of wealth or education are not considered, right? Because voluntary endeavor means I'm not doing it to get knowledge or wealth, right? So it's not for karma jnana. You're doing it, so sincere means you're making the endeavor to please Krishna, because always there's the question, what does sincere mean? So here Prabhupada's explaining, sincere means without the desire for karma and jnana. So pure devotional service, that's sincere. Right? So, and however close you get to that, that means that degree of sincerity. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments in verse 23. The Lord is the giver of benedictions to the surrendered. May He give benedictions to me. When he appears in this world, he has qualifications such as affection for his devotees, which arise from his shakti, arising from his sroop ramaya, not his maya shakti. Right, so his internal potency, not the external potency. May he be, right? Because if you just mention one as maya, the Lord functions along with his maya, then you understand it means the internal potency, yoga maya. But if there's two mentioned, then the second maya means the external. May he begin to engage my mind when I will engage in creation of this universe, invested with the power of the Lord and in actions such as lifting up the earth. May my mind not be attached to that. Rather, my mind should be attached to topics about his pastimes. He should do this so that I will avoid sins such as harshness arising from the work of creation. Right? Because Brahma's pointed out the weakness is that when one acts with passion, right? Creation, and management, these things, that the weakness is harshness. Right? If anybody has a complaint about managers, it's harshness. Right? Like that. So Brahma's pointing this out is that I may avoid that, because that comes up because we identify with it. Right? We think I'm the doer. When we don't think I'm the doer, then that harshness is not there. So that means then one's aware of the other individuals and all these, one can act properly. So it's inherent that we will come there.
Just like the mode of ignorance, there may be the element of harshness. Right? When you're destroying things, harshness might be there. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, the mode of goodness, then you don't have to worry about harshness. Right? Does that make sense? Chapter 9 summarizes questions and answers. Right? Yeah, so therefore... Yeah, so the Lord's affection for His devotees comes from His internal potency, not from the external potency. Right? That's the difficulty. We're functioning on external potency, and we expect the Lord to reciprocate through the external potency. But He doesn't. He reciprocates through the internal potency. So that's why sometimes it doesn't appear that, you know, we're getting our Mercedes-Benz. Yeah, you know, so...
Very often appears.
Yeah. Okay.
It's internal.
It's internal, yeah. The internal bends. See the bends within.
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 9 summarizes questions and answers. There are no questions in this chapter. Okay. Yes, okay. Adhyaya Prakash. Only further discussions on previous questions. Questions 50, 52, 58, and 59. Right? Because you see is that in these, it's not just a matter of getting directly to the answer. It's a matter of there's background necessary. There's proper attitude necessary. Because to understand a question, you have to have the right attitude. So that's what has to be established. So then whatever background is there, whatever information needs to be like that. So question 50, Srimad Bhagavatam 355. How does the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent, desirous Lord of the three worlds, and the controller of all energies, accept incarnations and create the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regulative principles for its maintenance? So then we're seeing how this process is going on, right? So... Question 52, 359. Please also describe how Narayana, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures, right? Because those are all fixed, those are established, right? It's already made by the Lord that way. So you can't change them. You know, we'll say, oh, no, we can do whatever we want, but that's the disease of the living entity. But the actual point is that, no, everything in the universe has a nature. And so then if you act according to that nature, then you're acting according to the laws of God. You go against that nature, it's not that you get any benefit. Right? Because the law is a law. It's not that you can break the law and it doesn't have a reaction. Right? That's Question 58, 37, 23 through 37. Please relate the events of creation after the Virat Rupa stage, right? So that means you have Hiranyagarbha Virat Rupa, so that means then Chaturmukh Brahma. So what's happening there? So that's what we're hearing now, is how he's on the lotus, he sees around the universe, he climbs down the stem of the lotus, then he meditates, then he sees the Lord, then in seeing the Lord, he can see the whole creation and destructive process, so now he can be involved. Right? Question 59. Please, 37, 38, 39. Please reveal the truth about the transcendental identities of Lord and His parts and parcels, the living entities. In this connection, what is Vedic knowledge and what is the prayojana, goals or necessities of the spiritual master and his disciples? Adhyaya Prakashika. In the ninth chapter, after praising Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the soul of the universe, Brahma gains power to create the universe by the Lord's mercy. Right? Then we don't see him sitting there and shaking and lights coming out and, you know, all kinds of strange and wonderful things. He doesn't blow up. Nothing, you know. He just gets the ability to create. Okay?
Well, then he did get that 4 heads.
He got 4 heads, but, you know. But there was no shaking or, you know. Yeah, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know. Yeah. Brahma glorifies the Lord as the only knowable object, the supreme form to which nothing is superior. I surrender to you, Brahma declares. You are untouched by matter and are the protector.
you show different degrees of reciprocation or relation to the properly meditating souls, the devotees. The pompous demigods and the regular performers of pious Vedic activities. Okay, properly meditating souls, the pompous demigods and regular performers of pious Vedic activities, right? So, in the negative, then you see is those who are impious, then they're also getting, he's reciprocating with them, you know, to different degrees. So, whatever is the degree that you're dealing with the Lord, to that degree he's reciprocating. Right? So, if you see him as the Supreme Lord, as Bhagavan, then he deals on that level. If you see him as Paramatma, then he deals on that level. Right? If you see him as Brahman, he deals on that level. So however you see him, he reciprocates. Thus, Brahma offers the Lord, who is the prime root of the planetary systems, eternal time, and the enjoyer of all sacrifices, his respectful obeisances. Next, Brahma describes the Lord's mystical sleep. He prays that now that his sleep had ended, the Lord should be merciful to him, a surrendered devotee. Brahma then expresses his desire, right, because the Lord laid down there for, what is it, 1,000. So now the Lord has awoken, so now he's praying that, you know, he give his blessing so that now he can perform his duties. In that work of creation, he wishes to be unaffected by material association. It's interesting to notice that they know their duties, so that means they're predominantly in goodness, that they know how to do their duties. But just like the archetype demigods, they knew their duties, but they couldn't perform them because the Lord hadn't entered as Prajumna so that they would all hold together. Right? Because Prajumna attracts. So he hadn't entered, so then how can they function? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So it means that to know our beauty is part of our nature.
Yes. That's why it said it's revealed. It'll be understood. You don't have to sit around and worry, you know, if you're a peacock in Vrindavan or something. It's just, you know, all these things will be revealed. Does that make sense? Yeah. Brahma then expresses his desire to create the material world. In that work of creation, he wishes to be unaffected by material association. Brahma requests the Lord's direction and then falls silent. Seeing Brahma anxious about constructing the universe, the Lord informs him that while meditating, Brahma would know everything from within his heart about the tasks of creation. Because, right? The Lord reveals. That's the whole point, is we think we have to figure it out. No, we have to be sincere in the performance of our duties, make our endeavor, then the Lord reveals, then we know. Because he's knowledge, he's remembrance, he's forgetfulness. The Lord reminds Brahma of his unsuccessful attempt to find his source by entering the water through the lotus flower. Now he, the Lord, is revealing himself. Right? So in other words, you can't find the Lord on your own. It always has to be through the Lord's mercy. The Lord tells Brahma that he will fulfill the desires of anyone who worships and prays to him as Brahma did. Therefore, the importance of Brahma Samhita. Right? He is the only proper object of attachment. The Lord then disappears. Because he is Prajumna, so he is the one to be attracted to. Right? Like that. He is Aniruddha, he's the one to be attached to. Right? Verses 1 through 10. Brahma, oh, here, Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses. Verses 1 through 10. Brahma begins his glorification. Verses 11 to 13, description of the Lord's reciprocation. Verses 14 to 19, Brahma offers obeisances to the Lord. Verses 20 to 26, Brahma's request for empowerment to create. Verses 27 to 44, the Lord responds to Brahma's prayers. Verses 1 to 10, Brahma begins his glorification. In verses 1 through 10, Brahma glorifies the Lord as the only knowable object, the supreme form to which nothing is superior, the one who is untouched by matter and the protector of all. The Lord shows different degrees of reciprocation, in relation to the devotees, the pompous demigods, and the regular performers of pious Vedic activities. After seeing the wonderful form of the Lord, Brahma, being inclined to create, concentrates his mind on the Supreme Lord and starts to pray. O my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. Right? Because they only know the Lord through his Brahman and Paramatma feature as they perceive in the material energy. So and so therefore they don't even know that what they're dealing with is the Lord. Right? So that's the sad part. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme, right? So if anybody comes up with ideas of what is superior to the Lord, it's not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. Verse 1, Srila Prabhupada explains, the highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities, who are conditioned by material bodies, is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. Different people have different theories regarding the supreme cause, but none of them are genuine. The only supreme cause is Vishnu, and the intervening impediment is the illusory energy of the Lord. Right? So the only supreme cause is Krishna. But what makes us come up with other ideas other than Krishna, that's the illusory energy. The Lord has empowered His wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world. And the conditioned souls, illusioned by the same energy, are thus unable to know the supreme cause, because they're distracted by all these wonderful arrangements. So it's not surprising that it's wonderful, because it's the Lord's external energy. So of course it's going to be wonderful. The sad part is that we become distracted by that wonderful and miss out on the original wonderful. Right? The most stalwart scientists and philosophers, therefore, cannot be accepted as wonderful. They only appear wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord. So, as he pointed out, the illusory energy is what makes this wonderful, right? Yes. The Lord has employed His wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world. Right? So then these philosophers and scientists, then they may make something seemingly wonderful, but it's the material energy that's wonderful. And that's an energy of the Lord, so it's actually the Lord is wonderful. The Lord's wonderful, therefore His material energy is wonderful, therefore the manifestations of the material energy are also wonderful. And then our not understanding that is not wonderful. That's the problem, is that we're... Yes. Under illusion, the general mass of people deny the existence of the Supreme Lord and accept the foolish products of illusory energy as supreme. The advanced devotees who relish the sweetness of Krishna's form and pastimes take compassion on those who deny His existence. Thus, according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Brahma says, one who personally experiences your sweetness laments for others. Those who have bodies are full of fault. They do not know the true nature of the Supreme Lord. They do not experience the Lord's sweetness and beauty. For the embodied being, worship of you is the goal, since it is possible to realize your beautiful form in that body. So, because they are embodied, they tend to be under the control of the material energy. So they don't realize the Lord. But the sweetness that they're looking for is in the Lord. So looking for it in the material energy, then they don't get. But it's possible for those who are embodied to get that realization. They actually can understand the Lord by the Lord's grace. That's why the human form of life is designed, is so that it can be engaged to understand the Supreme Lord. Krishna says, "Is there not some object with similar sweetness in this variegated world? Since you are saying that without realizing the Lord, life is a waste of time. There is nothing other than you in this that is a worthy object of knowledge." Right? Because you're saying, well, so isn't there something else in this world? There's so much going on here. So are you saying I'm so great? But isn't there something else here that's it's good? And so he's saying, no, there's nothing else. There's nothing other than Bhagavan at all. Right? So you're saying there's all these other things, but all those other things are Krishna also. So all being expanded from Krishna, the origin is always going to be the best because it contains all the aspects that all the other ones have. There is no object to be relished by the eye or ear except the spiritual beauty and glories indicated by the word Bhaga in Bhagavan, the possessor of Bhaga. But does not the happiness of Swarga give pleasure to the senses? That happiness is not pure. Being temporary, it is not eternal. And is disagreeable because of change, right? So he's saying, but you know, in Swarga they enjoy themselves, but it's always changing. It's never quite coming out the way they want, and it's ending. Right? It may come out today the way you want, but tomorrow it won't. So it's also the nature of its changing. So it's never satisfying to the soul. It is limited and low. But it is also impure, endowed with a taste for association with lusty crows, not to be seen in the followers of the Lord who are like swans, unattached to worldly enjoyment. Right? Because that mode of passion and that ignorance, right, the passion to desire to enjoy and that ignorance, that false ego, that then ruins it. Even the pleasures of Swarga are ruined by this. Because this is the effect of your Maya Shakti, it is not different from you. Because of transformation of the gunas of Maya, it appears great, Uru, ruling over Swarga and other places. Brahma continues. You have many forms. Oops, no, we'll stop here. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura.